can you tell us a little bit about the blog you wrote and what moved you to write it?
So the blog, which was kind of in an open letter style, was written to Jason Momoa mainly around I had been watching this play out on social media since he made his apology, and I have watched my sisters and other women on social media kind of trying to dig a little bit deeper and have the conversation about it. And I've seen this happen a few times, that once somebody offers an apology, and sometimes they use apologies to avoid the conversation, and so once the apology had been offered, there were so many people shutting down the conversation around it by using the apology and saying, look, he's apologised. Why do you need to seek, you know, to keep hammering him and almost turning him into the victim and the women into the attackers? And that was upsetting me. I wasn't even sure if he understood how that was working. But obviously there were all these other issues around decisions that he's made and language that he's used over the years that weren't addressed in that apology, and in particular his association of haka with rape and pillage was really problematic for me, and I've been trying to provoke, I guess, or get him to delve a little bit into that side of it, into why he had used this idea of rape with our haka in that way and how deeply that hurt as well. So, yeah, I guess right. It was a part of it was that he seemed to think that was the only thing he had to, his apology inferred, that it was this one small incident years ago and that's not him. But when I looked at all of these other issues, I'm like, it kind of is you from time to time. And I'm not saying that's your whole personality. You don't have to be defined by that. But from time to time, you have used this language that contributes to rape culture.
So, okay, a couple of things there. The fact that he hasn't actually apologised earlier than this, right? And so it's never been raised as an issue before now. But for him to say sorry and then to automatically be... everyone kind of be okay with it. That's why you sort of took his apology and said, you said it was a good apology, but hang on, you've missed the point?
Yes, exactly. So I guess one of the issues is that, you know, I understand that when you're in the limelight sometimes you get managed, or there are people who will give you advice about when you should and shouldn't do things. And when I look at the clip of him making the original rape reference, he in his panel discussion or the media engagement, I think you can see that there's some really nervous laughter there, and I am quite sure that he would have been aware, especially from some of his interviews straight afterwards, that was a faux pas, that he shouldn't have said that. But I also know that if you issue an apology, it can sometimes have the effect of drawing more attention when you, in fact, want less attention. And so I have to wonder whether or not that was behind him not issuing a full apology earlier, especially as his statements say that he's felt appalled about it, that he's been very distressed about it, but he hasn't then moved to apologise for it. So my only, you know, kind of conclusion I can come to from that is, if you were that distressed but you did about your, you know, what you had said, but you hadn't actually apologised for it, is that because you were seeking to not draw attention to it? And I would love to hear what he has to say about that, because I can't think of any other reason why he wouldn't apologise sooner. And then it's the, as you mentioned, you know, so many people just want to leap on the, well, that's it, and then use that as the, you know, and it's the same way when we have discussions with each other in a personal space. Sometimes people can use an apology to shut a conversation down, and it's kind of incumbent, I feel, upon us to say, well, thank you, but look, let's talk about it, because what's most important about an apology, right, is that you understand what you're apologising for and that you won't do it again. And it's the action behind the apology. The same goes for us when we receive apologies from government. It's an empty apology around historical wrongs unless we understand that there's going to be some movement behind there to not repeat that, you know, what it is that you're apologising for.
So given that it was sort of public pressure around other issues of sexual assault that had come up, that led him, you know, caused people to kind of show that this happened in the past, and then actually he couldn't avoid an apology. Do you think that is this the way that we should be dealing with these issues? Does it take a huge number of people to say, you know, this has happened to me as well? When is this going to end?
You know, I think there's some, probably the most heartening issue, you know, the most heartening response out of these public campaigns for me have been from some of the men who have watched it, who have watched this chorus come out through social media, and it's friends that they know and it's family members that they know who are saying, yes, this has happened to me too, and the broadest spectrum of it. I know that there's been some criticism from people who are saying, I don't want to talk about a very severe sexual assault and reduce it down to a hashtag when somebody else will be talking about being catcalled under that same hashtag. And that's fine, I understand that part of it. But I also think that capturing it as a full spectrum under this theme of, yes, it's happened to me too, has been really useful in helping men to step out through various examples, online examples, of what rape culture looks like and how it's affected women. So, you know, people like, I mean, of course, Max Harris is kind of already a somewhat evolved, a very evolved person anyway, so it didn't surprise me that he was able to go, oh my gosh. And the most important part of it was what came after that was me, I've done it. And it's these men online that I've seen saying, I've done it, and accepting their personal responsibility and saying, and I do it, and I'm going to work at not doing it anymore. But it's that first step of taking personal responsibility and understanding that this is something that they do. And that for me has been heartening, because it's the taking of personal responsibility. And that was kind of what I had hoped that we could see from this issue as well, was that just a bit more personal responsibility be taken around your ongoing behaviour and the ongoing thought patterns and what's underneath that. It's not just that you say something and you blurt it out your mouth. It comes from some ideas in your head. So let's unpick some of those ideas, because evidently one of those ideas is that rape seems to be connected to some idea of masculinity, was what was coming through to me. Certainly Jason Momoa's movie, The Road to Paloma, that was really problematic, and I actually watched that because of this. I thought, okay, well, if this has been his contribution to the discussion, I want to watch it. But it was very masculine, kind of hyper-masculine, full of violence, you know, strip scenes, and It was problematic. It didn't feel like it didn't feel like it was empowering wahine or the role of wahine at all. In fact, quite the opposite. So that was when it occurred to me, was that, okay, I can accept that maybe you want to contribute, but you need to seriously look at the thought patterns, your associations, and the mindset that is underpinning the language that you're choosing.
I'm glad you sort of touched on that, because that is one of the sort of issues that was raised about the Me Too campaign, it being that still it's the responsibility of those that it's affected rather than those causing it that are speaking to it. So that shift from Me Too to I Did, that's like the next step of it, right?
Right, yes. It's the I Did part, which for me has been, I think, the most powerful part of it, but I guess the question is, would I Did have happened without Me Too?
Aye, kia ora.
And so, you know, I mean, I could easily share my stories of sexual assault as well, And that's not to detract from the Me Too campaign. I applaud everybody who has. I chose not to. And I think, of course, you know, everybody has their agency to choose whether or not they are going to share theirs or not share theirs. But I think at least those who were brave enough to do that held the role of provoking the I did aspect, which I feel is probably the most powerful.
So in terms of that next step, and back to kind of the language issue around rape and masculinity, what are the implications of joking about sexual violence?
Well, I guess it has the effect of minimising and covering it, doesn't it? And again, if you go back to the press conference where Jason Momoa made that quite horrid comment around describing raping beautiful women as a perk of his job, you can see that the laughter there is somewhat nervous, and I get a sense that people are aware that of how inappropriate the comment was, but the laughter has been used in a way to cover up the seriousness of what just happened. And I see that happening a lot when laughter is used as a means of covering something up. And laughter is important, of course, depending on how it's just very powerful depending on how it's used. But when I see, and I know I just posted about the film Waru this morning and how the really potent, powerful call to action that was issued well over 20 years ago in 1994 with Once Were Warriors has since been diluted into a series of jokes and memes, and how troubling that would be for me to have been so seriously impacted. I think it's probably a sense of trauma inside of myself, because when I was sitting in that film, I was thinking, gosh, I haven't been so personally and emotionally rocked since I watched Once Were Warriors. And I think it's done differently. It's definitely a more female voice. It's a call to action. It refers to the role of wahine and what we can do in relation to what's going on in our households. But also, I was mortified at the thought that some of these really core messages around violence could again be reduced down to jokes and memes, and how distressing it would be for me to see that happening with this film, as it has with Once Were Warriors.
Do you want to talk more about Waru?
Oh, yep, I'm still processing, yeah. Because it was just last night, so I'm still processing it, but I'm happy to talk about it. Yeah, no, I'm happy to talk about it.
So with Waru, you've got eight wahine Māori filmmakers dealing with issues, like, as you say, that have been raised earlier in films like Once Were Warriors. Why are these issues still being raised?
Well, I think that's the big question, isn't it? Why are we still being called upon to make a stand? Why are we still having these films that are apparently a call to arms after so many years? Why are we still having to have this conversation after so many years? And that was really my big concern and kind of wānanga I was having with myself on the drive home from the movies last night as well. Is it about who we're calling into the conversation?
Mm.
Is it about the place, you know, where we are placing responsibility? Because even though there are different themes and different approaches and different perspectives, I think, you know, this idea of we have to take responsibility for ourselves has also been present in all of these films and just the whole wide range of films, not just Once Were Warriors, but a wide range of films over the years that talk about our challenges in our households and in our communities and how the solutions are with us. I thought a lot about my friend Paula Crawford Moyle and the strong focus that she has on institutional racism and how that has played out in a lot of these areas as well, and how difficult it is for us who do call out for help, who are calling out for help, who are trying to take responsibility but also are calling for support, and they're not getting that support in many ways. We know that MVC exists, but, you know, the state agencies are not being as effective in their support of people who do want to make a change as well. And I feel like of all the movies that I've watched, I still have yet to see one that is calling that out. And I don't want to escape that we all have personal responsibility, but I feel like that's been said so many times now, and I'm like, where are we going to start seeing this this extension out into the structural racism that surrounds us? I think, especially in terms of some of the discussions around media and how we're portrayed in that film, I think that was great, but then I also would like to see some extensions out into structural racism.
I want to give a shout out to that film though. That's I thought it was an incredible piece, very very heavy and challenging. But myself as a young Pākehā woman, I've seen it twice now, and I got asked by a friend of mine, a young Māori woman, who said afterwards she was shook, and she basically asked me how I could sit through that twice. And in a sense, I could sort of understand to an extent, but also in so many ways it doesn't directly affect me, that I had to think about how that, and like you said in your post, how do Pākehā audiences respond to this? And I could feel that, and especially in that news story where she receives such kind of what people say casual racism, but you can kind of, it's not really extreme. You know, I feel like some people would see that and be like, oh, that doesn't really happen in newsrooms or anything like that, but that it does, it really does. And those little things matter, just when they, you know, when they've got this issue of a young Māori tamariki who has been killed, and they look for images to go with it, and they think of when they're trying to find the body snatching images, right? And then they look for fishing stories of people who have overfished, or these kinds of elements. And I think that would be a good metaphor in terms of that extreme kind of casual racism? Would that be a good metaphor to transfer to other institutions?
Yeah, very probably. I guess one of the things is that casual racism to me never feels very casual. It very rarely feels casual. There's like probably, I guess, maybe microaggressions or micro-racism that people, but for me that probably seems to them to be micro from their perspective, and it's all a matter of perspective, I guess, on how you're receiving it or giving it. But yeah, I think, you know, I think about whether or not those types of comments or types of discussion could be platformed in front of agencies, in front of state agencies, to see how that might impact on sensibilities. I really wanted to talk to Paula afterwards to say, do you think that this would help? Would this help? Or because I know that not many people want to sit out to have this conversation again. So I think generally people are seeking to have it in a different way, or maybe have it in a way that equates to action or equates to empowerment. And maybe I'd love to hear from the producers about whether or not they felt that they wanted to actually make a movie, what they wanted to make it about. Like, did you want to make it about child abuse? Because I'll be really interested to see whether or not some of these indoctrinated state agencies actually get that message if they watched it. Do you know what I mean? Like, maybe we could put that in front of them, but what would they see? And I think you have some really powerful insights into it. But I have many other friends like you, Pākehā friends and whānau, who would have some very powerful insights into it. I don't know a whole lot of people on the inside and the state agencies that might have those same insights. And I think a part of that is the indoctrination and training processes that do get called out by people like Paula. So, yeah.
Mm. And actually, I mean, just on reflection on what I'm talking about, that the fact that, you know, like I could say it doesn't directly affect me, but the fact of that little news story in the film saying that it is not just a Māori issue, it is an issue that we have to deal with as a country.
Yes, no, that's quite right. And I mean, you know, as has been pointed out, it's so often the case that the non-Māori babies who are, or children who are subjected to severe abuse or are killed are not featured on the media or on the news in the same way as when it does with Māori. So in that sense, the experience that we have of being consistently platformed in this way is something that we experience, but that everybody must take responsibility for. And the issue itself, the abuse and the loss of young lives in this way, again, is something that we all need to take responsibility for. But I think that there are some very unique ways in which Māori are experiencing this issue in our country, for sure.
So I guess to wrap that up in terms of collective responsibility and the ideas that we have or the kaupapa we've gone through in this talk, how do we as a collective start dealing with these issues, both from abuse in the home, and abuse in workplaces, and abuse online?
You know, and I guess it comes back to the similar issues that I was talking about with Jason Momoa, really, was that making these connections, and I think probably the best way to make connections are community meetings and community gatherings, more community gatherings. We don't gather as much as in community settings as what we're used to. We don't have that many, and especially if we do, we gather in very disparate ways. We gather in ways to, like, go for rides and buy candy floss and still hang out in our own separate groups, but just in a communal place. But gathering together as communities to tackle some of these issues, I feel, is one of the most powerful ways to start making these connections and hearing from different perspectives around how this is impacting upon us. I really value, and I also want to say at the outset that this film is an incredibly important film, insofar as it creates a dialogue around the role of wāhine, the responsibility of wāhine, the impacts upon wāhine, the perspectives of wāhine. It's the way that the thing has been put together is very wāhine, and I feel that that in itself makes it a very important film. I also feel that we need to be making connections, and that a lot of this comes back down to broken connections and disconnected communities, and people who can't connect the problem, to their own behaviour, to their own language choices, and to the way that we treat each other.